you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Jerry O'Connell's bad English accent.
That's a good one.
Well, you know.
Okay, so thank you for joining us. As always, we are discussing two more episodes of Sliders. This week we're discussing Desert Storm and Dragon Slide. So episode one, Desert Storm, was written by Matt Dearborn and directed by Jim Johnston. This originally aired on November 1st of 1996.
Do you have police around here?
Police? Oh, that's rich. Ain't no law around here, baby girl. Except maybe for Cutter. Hasn't been since the water dried up. Anyway, I got other customers. You gonna order something?
Yeah, I like to have some water. Tall glass.
Brown or clear? Brown or clear?
We'll take the clear.
Nice choice. What you trading?
I take it you don't take cash.
Ooh, nice. But it runs on batteries. We don't get too many of those around here. We trade useful items, tools, skins, that sort of thing.
Come on, help us out. Now, we need some water. What are we supposed to do?
Well, you could always try to find the lost city of Aquarius. They say the water runs free down there. Of course, they also say it's where the spaceships go to gas up. Let me know if you find something to trade.
We join our sliders in a trek across the desert in search of water or L.A. before eventually finding a small town in which they bear witness to what seems to be a woman being held against her will and who tries to communicate telepathically with Wade. She convinces her friend to help rescue the girl, a water priestess who takes them to Cutter, who first appears as Mad Max-style road warriors but quickly change their tune when they see the girl, Devon, is in their car. Devon then goes into a trance, showcasing her powers to find water. While Devon and Wade bond, the others get the feeling like things are not quite as they seem and decide the next morning they will get their supplies and leave. Their plan is ruined when the man from earlier, Jeremy, from the marketplace, tries to kidnap Devon again, but instead grabs Wade. While they initially disagree, Wade comes to believe him that he and Devon are from the same hidden mysterious tribe of Aquarius of Eden, the Water Bearers, and that Devon was kidnapped as a child by Cutter rather than rescued. Wade and Jeremy reunite with the Sliders and they kidnap Devon away from Cutter, eventually finding their way back to Eden. Devon starts to experience flashbacks of her past and sees how things really happened with Cutter, who attacked and killed her father and friends before being taken away. While in Eden, Arturo visits with their master healer, and though he scoffs at the mystical New Age practice of healing, he does eventually give it a try despite his ego. With slide time arriving, the crew heads to the surface but are attacked by Cutter. As they retreat back into Eden, Cutter and gang follow and a fight ensues, which ends with Devon using her telepathic powers to wipe Cutter's brain of the location of Eden, leaving him a babbling idiot.
What's with the markings?
They tell the story of my tribe. See, this indicates we're a splinter from the main group. This tells where our group settled.
I recognize this one. It's the zodiac symbol for Aquarius.
We're sometimes called the water bearers.
The myth? It's true about Eden and the lost city of Aquarius?
We're not lost. We just choose to remain a mystery.
Okay, so let's get into some trivia on this episode.
All right, so in this episode, as a lot of the episodes, there's a lot of just extra lines here and there peppered throughout different scenes. Nothing really significant, but again, if you want to read those little extra lines, little color lines, you can go ahead and go over to dimensionsofcontinuity.com in their Lost and Found section. There is a line that gives a little bit about alt history where they talk about Quinn mentions a great civilization on a continent that existed between Asia and North America, somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, which sank on our world. And then Remy says something like, oh yeah, I read about that. Didn't it sink into the ocean? You know, and that was like it. That was it for the alt history. They also try to get jobs in this world, and they go to Diggs to get jobs so they can, you know, have water and food. But Diggs basically says, nope. There was also, during that fire scene with the campfire, when they were talking to the gang member, that wasn't supposed to be a gang member there. They were supposed to be talking to Cutter. But of course, as we'll get into the discussion, the actor playing Cutter had died by that point.
Ah.
Yeah, so they had to rewrite that scene there and gave it to the gang member instead. There was a scene with Devon and Cutter after they got her back, and Devon and Cutter were playing tag, like a flirting game of tag, like being silly, goofy, young teenagers in love, you know? And Remy's watching, you know, from afar, and he's talking, I think it was with Arturo, and he's like, you know, I don't like this guy. There's something, you know, this is not right. I don't care what's going on. Something's wrong. And, he's the one who initially says, let's get out of here. We don't need to be here. There was some lines from Jeremy and Wade, which I thought was weird. Jeremy and Wade talking to Devon about how her powers are developing and her mother is guiding her home. Like, I can understand Jeremy saying that, but I don't know why Wade was in the script originally saying that. Like, she was encouraging Devon, like, no, don't deny your powers. They're just coming into fruition, or, you know, coming into maturity. I was like, that's weird that Wade would be saying that, you know?
Yeah, you think he would have grown up with it.
Well, yeah, exactly. It was just odd. I don't know. I expect it from Jeremy because he's from the tribe, but what does Wade know, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. There was also a humorous line between Cutter and his sidekick, you know, that was always with him.
Yeah.
And they cut it out. It was something about how it was when Cutter says, I don't even know how I got, you know, messed up with you. You're such an idiot, you know. And Wolf says, hey, you know, that remember that time when you got bit by that snake and I had to help you by sucking, like the implication that was he got bit by a snake. He got bit by a snake, a poisonous snake, somewhere uncomfortable, and Wolf helped him by sucking the venom out.
Yeah.
That's the implication.
Well, not to get into it now. We'll talk about it in the discussion. But yeah, Mad Max had themes that maybe match that kind of.
Okay. All right. And then, let's see, finally, there was a scene of our boys, Quinn and Remy and the professor, in a hot spring bath when they got to Eden. They had like it was a big thing, like, you know, hot spring baths down there because, of course, water is scarce. But, you know, since they're the water bearers, they have it. And they were sitting there, Quinn and Remy, you know, in the sauna, basically. And the professor comes back after going to see the healer, and him and Quinn are having a conversation about how he still thinks it's garbage, but he does feel a little better. And Remy is just confused about the whole thing. Like, he's like, what are you guys talking about? It's like, don't worry about it. Nothing.
Right.
And then finally there was a scene, which I thought is perfect because the whole episode wouldn't have happened if Wade hadn't like butted in. And there's a scene where she apologizes to Jeremy and said, I'm sorry for butting in. We shouldn't have done that. You know, you could have had Devon back earlier if we hadn't done that. You know, it's like, yeah, pretty much.
I'm the master healer. I can help you, but only if you believe I can.
Sir, I'm a man of science. I respect knowledge and truth.
There is a truth beyond knowledge, my friend. Only fools deny it.
Are you calling me a fool, sir?
What would you call a dying man who passes up a chance for life? purely out of intellectual vanity.
A realist?
Professor, why don't you give it a shot?
Mr. Mallory.
So the healer is right. It is your vanity. You can't stand the idea that you might be wrong. You'll even die to be certain that you're right? It's your life, Professor.
Mr. Mallory. I keep forgetting that you are more fearful of my death than I am. If it'll make you happier, I'll go and visit the witch doctor.
Okay, so getting into our discussion of Desert Storm. So, like you were saying, we don't really get much into the old history of this world. Pretty much it's just desert world, and that's how it is.
Yep, exactly.
So they're walking through the desert, and, you know, they come across some, like, blown up trucks and things like that, really setting up that Mad Max-ness of the episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because we're going to get into that later, because Wade just... of course, blatantly calls it out. But first they end up at this like pit stop called the Sand Pit.
Right.
Where everybody hangs out. And this is pretty much Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome light.
Okay. Now see, I saw these movies like when I was a kid. I don't remember much about them, just the overall impression that I know of them. And I know like it does feel like when I was watching it, even back then, I was like, this does feel like Mad Max. I just don't remember the details.
Yeah. Well, in Mad Max, the town is called Barter Town.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
very spot on because it's the place where everybody goes to trade stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how this place is. You've got something to trade. You can trade it for water or gas or whatever.
Right.
And, of course, Diggs is there. Why would Diggs not be there?
Exactly.
And he immediately just fills us in on what's going on.
Everything.
Cutter.
Everything we need to know.
Slave trade. Thank you, Diggs.
Yeah, you know, like, I forget if I was going to say this in the second episode or not, but I just... Diggs... solely exists to be an exposition extra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like his only role. And that's why I hate him. You know, I just don't like him at all. Even when we had like the worst of the worst, you know, exposition extras, at least they were there and then they were gone and you didn't see him again. But now you know that when Diggs shows up, oh, we're going to get everything we need to know from that guy right there.
Yeah. And he's always going to give you like a 50-50 choice on something. Because yeah. I remember like the first time we saw him, it was like Remy asked him where the restroom was. And he's like, do you want the one with toilet paper? It costs $5 more. And this time it's like, can we get some water, brown or clear?
Exactly. You know, and the thing that I don't understand is like Tracy Torme is not a bad writer, but he liked this character. He specifically wrote this character in. And it's like, I don't get why. It's such a, I mean, he's not a great character. He really isn't.
I did like the touch, though, that they go straight to, like, the default thing of, we've got no money, have the watch. And he was like, yeah, but it runs on batteries. Where am I going to get batteries from?
Exactly. We don't get those around here.
So they can't even get water. So that was actually, that was kind of a nice touch to it.
Right, right.
But then, of course, Wade can't not get involved.
I know.
Because she's seeing... what she assumes is some sort of slave trade, you know, with Devon. And she just talks everybody, or at least guilts them, into helping out.
Oh, yeah, totally guilts them. But, you know, it's like last, you know, during The Guardian, he was okay with interference because you knew the situation. You sort of knew what was going on. But here, this is a totally different place, totally different world. You have no idea. And he's right. You know, it's like, we don't know what's going on here. Maybe we should just not get involved.
Yeah, it's interesting that Arturo would call that out. And they would go ahead and ignore it, only for him to turn out to be right.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, he's always been the one preaching non-involvement, you know? Like, that was his thing. And I don't know. In a world like this, like, you don't know. She could have been, like, first of all, she's communicating telepathically, which no one else hears, you know, only her. So it's like, I don't know, do we really want to get messed up with this? I mean, look at this place. It's so foreign to our world. We don't know. She could be a bad person, you know? We don't know that.
And I guess, like, technically, she's not the first person to try and telepathically talk to Wade. There was that that one with the Oracle, you know, showed up. So I guess you could maybe say that Wade's maybe used to stuff like this, but still. Like, come on.
Yes.
So they rescue her and they take her back to her people, as she calls them. And they're the Oso Mad Max biker gang led by Cutter. Like I said, like Wade just calls it out that, you know, of all the people we rescue Miss Mad Max.
Right.
And it's all guys, you know. Mm-hmm. It seems that Devin's the only woman there. And it's like I was saying in the trivia, is that this is a heavy theme of Mad Max, is that there is this really strange homoerotic undertone to all the movies.
Okay, all right.
They're always driving around with the leader, and the leader always has this boy on the back of his bike with him. And they're wearing like skin tight leathers and all that stuff. So yeah, you know, it's like I was saying in that trivia thing about the sucking out of the venom.
Right.
That could have been like an homage to what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
As much as they could get away with for this time slot in 1996.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm going to have to rewatch the movies at some point because it's been like I said, I'm 40 now. I probably saw them when I was like, you know, maybe 10 at the most, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember my father watching them and I was watching them too, but I don't remember all the details and I surely didn't pick up on a lot of the stuff, of course.
Well, I only just recently watched them again because, of course, Fury Road came out. So I went and watched them all and I'm like, wow, you know, how did I not see this glaring thing?
Right. Well, yeah, now that you've explained that deleted scene makes a lot more sense. I was thinking when I saw it, I was like, why would they put that in there? That's such a bad joke. It's like, oh my God.
That's when we get into this whole thing about Devin being what they call the water witch.
Right.
She knows where water is and she can find it.
The thing, you know, about her, to me, like when I first saw her, and it's not like I know this singer very well, but she looks a little bit like Ariana Grande.
All right. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, when she first kind of like, oh, she looks a little bit like that singer. I've not really listened to any of her songs, but I've seen her picture like on news things, you know, online, stuff like that. But when she goes in the car with them and they get surrounded by the Mad Max guys on their motorcycles and jeeps and all, that scene, like, she's, like, ducked down. Like, they pushed her down, and she's trying to tell them that they're her friends and everything like that. It just felt like false drama, you know, because she easily could have told them earlier, said, by the way, when we get out here, my friends are going to be on motorcycles and stuff, so, you know, just calm down when you see them. But instead, they keep her down so that they can try to, like, have a brief car chase.
Yeah, and there is a little bit of a disconnect there as well, because she seems quite willing to help them out because they helped her.
Right.
You know, she promises them water and all that stuff. So when she gets off the bike and she says to Cutter, oh, you know, they rescued me, I promised them water, he just, like, straight away is just like, she promised them water, so we're probably going to have to ditch them. I'm like, why wouldn't she, like, say something at this point? Like, why wouldn't she be like, no, don't do that?
Yeah, exactly.
But whatever. But Cutter is an interesting character.
He's an interesting character, just not played by a very good actor, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk ill of the deceased, but I just like the way he delivered a lot of lines. Like, I'm not a professional actor, but it just, a lot of the lines seemed a little stilted. Like when he took her out of the Jeep, he's like, well, you, my child, will ride with me. It just seemed like so like community theater acting, you know?
Yeah. You know who he reminded me of was Kevin Costner in Waterworld. It's kind of strange that it's Kevin Costner in Waterworld considering it's Desert World.
Desert World, yeah.
But that's, he kind of had that look, but of course Kevin Costner was more of a good guy in that movie.
Right, okay.
But yeah, he kind of had that look, but I don't know if this is an insult or a compliment, but he's no Kevin Costner.
It depends on the movie, I think. You know?
Then, of course, we get into Jeremy the Hapless Kidnapper.
Mm-hmm. He kidnaps Wade, and when they come to the next scene, like, he's sleeping and she's laying there, you know, tied up next to him, and like she's trying to get all her rope off and everything, but she starts to run away with her mask on because he had put a bag over her head, and like she leaves it on and she starts to run away. I'm like, why don't you take that off? You know, it's like, if you're trying to escape, it's good to see where you're going.
And again, disconnect. Like, we're going to find out that he wasn't technically kidnapping her, he was rescuing her.
Mm-hmm.
So why would he put a bag on her head and then leave it on all night?
Right.
Like, you know, you think he would take her, sure, put a bag on her head. You got to keep it quiet because she's probably going to scream. But once you're mm-hmm. away, take the bag off her head and explain the situation to her.
Yeah.
Like, that is really mean.
Yeah, it's of course, it's for the dramatic reveal that, oh, my God, I grabbed the wrong girl. You know, that's the reason. But yeah. It's like, ugh. Yeah, it totally makes sense what you said.
And he immediately lets Wade go, too. I love that. Like, he's kidnapped her, had a bag on her head all night, realizes it's not Devin. All right, I'll just take the ropes off. I'm walking away now. As if she's not going to try to attack him or something like that.
Yeah. You know,
she could do anything.
Mm-hmm. She don't know. He don't know Wade. She's spunky. She's sassy.
But then Jeremy gets his shirt off.
And he gets his shirt off.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, Wade's looking at him, like his chest and everything. And I'm like, Wade's cupping a bit of a look. And I think she probably was. But, you know, she kind of maybe gets caught out a little and goes straight to, you know, what's with the tats?
Right. Look at your tats. Let me see. I got to touch those. Let me see. Those are interesting tats. Oh, sorry. My hand slipped, you know.
And the other thing it made me think of, too, was that Devin had tattoos, like waves or something like that. And I was thinking, did she get those when she was a kid? Like, they look like similar tattoos to the ones that Jeremy has. So I was like, did she get those when she was 5? Because at this age, they would be all stretched out and weird looking.
Yeah, more than 10 years later, they should be. So before Wade got kidnapped, she was bonding with Devin in the camp. And then it happened again when she's talking with Jeremy. She mentions "in my world" to both of them. And neither of them, like, batted an eye at that. They just accepted, like, that she's from a different dimension, or they just passed it off, whatever. But, you know, she's very nonchalant about saying, well, in my world, da-da-da-da. And in my world, da-da-da-da. And no one says anything about it.
I guess maybe you could argue that when she says "in my world," you know, they wouldn't take that literally.
Right.
Like, maybe they would take it metaphorically.
Possibly. I mean, if someone was talking to me and they said, well, you know, on my world, when people do this, I'd be like, what? What was that? Yeah. Wait, rewind. On your world?
Well, the difference between on my world and in my world.
Right.
But you're right. She may have said on my world.
She may have. I don't remember. I may have typed it wrong. But either way. But,
no, I did. I noticed the same thing. I was like, why is nobody reacting to her?
As we were saying earlier about Wade just butting in when she probably shouldn't. When she flip-flops and decides, oh, we got to help this guy now. Like, Remy looks a little annoyed. You know, it's like, really? We just, what? Really? Damn it, Wade.
Yeah, I love when they drive up too, and Arturo's just like, oh, they're looking pretty chummy for someone who just got kidnapped. And then straight away, Remy's just coming, get the hell away from her.
I know. Jumps right in there, yeah. Yeah, I was like, they got to be annoyed because, like, she guilted them into helping, and now she's like, that was a mistake, guys. This is the good guy, you know? It's like, ugh. Wade.
Yeah, and it's like you were saying back in the trivia, too. It's like, this is all her fault. They should just not have gotten involved in
this. Right, exactly. There's no reason to have gotten involved, really.
Yeah.
The thing that I, like, what is this plan where, you know, they decide to get Devin, and Quinn's plan is to jump on Cutter's Jeep and try to get him that way? I'm like, that's not a good plan for someone who, like, Cutter is Mad Max. He's an, you know, like, basically an outlaw, and he lives this life, you know? He's a tough guy. Jumping on his Jeep and trying to, like, beat him up that way is not a very good plan, I don't think.
No. I mean, if the plan was to just get him to stop,
right,
then he succeeded. But
he succeeded in that, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He gets on the car. And then as soon as he stops, he goes flying. I'm like, man, he could have seriously injured himself. I'm surprised he really wasn't that hurt.
I know. Like, I was thinking, like, couldn't they have done, you know, like a, you know, like a Star Wars where they pretend that they've captured Jeremy and take him back to the camp, and, you know, in, they're in their good graces because they don't know that they know Jeremy is a the good guy. So they could just act like he's the bad guy, and they get into the camp, and then in the dead of night steal away with, you know, like, get him out of their little jail or whatever they have, and then, you know, take off with Devin. Something else, something other than just, let's jump on the car and get him to stop, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He already had that one plan where he kidnapped Wade, so why couldn't that plan just work again?
Exactly, exactly. And the other thing, one thing that I was wondering about with Devon, she just blocked out her entire past, you know, which I understand can happen because when you have a traumatic event, sometimes you block out those things. It's too much for your brain to handle, you know, especially for children, you know, they block out traumatic events. But then it like as she's getting closer back home, it just conveniently starts to remember things as it's needed for the plot. She starts to remember things just like randomly. And like was her mother who was trying to project those into her head, maybe trying to project the thoughts into her head, or, you know, was it just like, yeah, we need her to remember now?
I don't know. It is very convenient, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But they get back to the lost city of Aquarius.
Every time they say Aquarius, I cannot help but thinking of the Hair song, you know, that Aquarius song.
They kept going Age of Aquarius.
Yeah. This is the Age of Aquarius. It's been playing through my head the entire time we're talking here. It's in my head.
And it is such a trope to call the water city Aquarius. And of course, Jeremy has the zodiac symbol for Aquarius in his tattoo as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Wade could conveniently recognize it as well. But anyway, getting into how Cutter ends up at Aquarius.
Well, you know, like, I didn't understand this. He goes to the sand pit and talks with Diggs, of course. Why wouldn't you talk to Diggs? You know, mm-hmm. he knows everything. So he talks to Diggs, and he sees that Diggs has Devon's crystal. And, like, suddenly, he's like, oh, my gosh, she's a water bearer. She's from Eden. Why didn't I see it before? Yes, why didn't you see that before? Like, just suddenly now, someone else is holding her crystal, and now you realize that she's from Eden? You didn't think about this before? Really? I didn't understand that scene. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, and Jeremy goes into that whole thing about how, oh, well, she doesn't have a crystal anymore. And he's like, well, to anybody who doesn't know how to use it, it's just a crystal.
Right.
But then, you know, in that scene, when Cutter's finally like, oh, she's from Eden and stuff like that, the crystal starts working and telling him where to go. And I'm like, wasn't she in the sand pit at one point? Like, why wasn't it working for her? Like, if it was going to work for anyone, it should work for her, not Cutter.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it is. It's just, like, plot contrivance. Like, it's convenient for the story, so this is how it's going to go. It's not very well written.
Nope.
But, you know, once we're in Aquarius, Arturo has a chance to visit the Master Healer.
I like the scene. I like the Latin that he sings, and he has no idea what he's saying.
Yeah, I do like the character of the Master Healer, you know, it's all that stuff about, because of course Arturo's going to go in there and he says he's, you know, hocus pocus mumbo jumbo, and the Master Healer's just like, well, of course it is, but it's nice.
Exactly.
And then he's like, take one of these and lie down. What is it? They're mints. We make them ourselves.
I know. It was really well done. I like that. That's my favorite part of this episode, really.
It's good that it was kind of kept between just Arturo and Quinn and the Master Healer as well. Unlike, you know, there was the scene where Remy was supposed to be confused. And he's like, yeah, I can see why you cut that. You don't want that to be revealed just yet.
Right.
Yeah, I think it works really well. And unfortunately, there's really nothing that can be done. And were you really expecting anything to really come from it?
Right. No. I mean, it's just... I figured nothing's going to happen there. It's like, and he really didn't even do anything. Like, it's not that, like, to me, I don't know. It's like, that's a magical thing that Master Healer is doing or whatever. He's, you know, a faith healer or whatever. I don't know if I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Arturo wouldn't at all.
Arturo,
you know,
just calls him the witch doctor.
Well, exactly. But I mean, I guess, you know, when you're in that situation, might as well try everything available to you.
I have to call out that, you know, this Aquarius place is hidden, I think underground, but at some point they are in direct sunlight.
Yeah, they are when they first go in. Yeah.
Kind of confused about how it's hidden.
Maybe they have special, like, see-through rocks or something.
Well, they've got fake rocks. I'll tell you that much, because there's rocks that are sliding open.
Right.
And then at one point when Cutter shows up and they're all of his gang is shooting at them, a bunch of like giant rocks just like fling through the air like they're made of styrofoam that they are. And I was like, God, this is just shoddy looking. This is Star Trek season one shoddy.
Along with that, the CGI of the clouds above Devon's head when she uses her powers, those were not great either. No. You know, it's like if they just focused on like good stories, like honest to goodness, good stories, good character stories, they wouldn't have to worry about the CGI, the special effects as much, you know, because the special effects are nice to have. But when you put the focus on that, you could see that it's a TV budget and a low TV budget at that.
Yeah.
Oh, so Jeremy was using the crystal, you know, he's like holding it up and listening to it and everything. And he says, you know, this is like a homing beacon so we can get home. But does he need the crystal to find home? Doesn't he know how to get home without the crystal? Like, you would assume so, you know? But instead, he has to use the crystal.
Yeah, I don't quite understand how hidden this place is. They make it, they talk about it being just so hidden away.
Yeah, like a mysterious thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the sandpit had a map to it. Yeah. That clearly said, like, sandpit's here, Eden's over here. Like,
right.
It's probably not exact, but it's over here somewhere.
Right, in this area.
And Cutter pretty much uses the map at one point. Even though he's got the crystal, he still kind of uses that map.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't exactly get it either. So when they go down underneath the ground or whatever into Eden, we got, you know, Cutter and his crew come down after him. And there's like a cave-in, all right? And Remy stands over Devon during the cave-in, okay, you know, protecting her, you know, and he sends her off to go with the rest of the sliders. But then instead of going, he starts to inspect the bodies that just got hit by the rocks. Like, he walks over to the bodies and looks at them, making sure that they're knocked out, you know, just so that he can get captured by Cutter. Like, that's his sole role there, to be, you know, like, just... you know, the kidnapped guy. And I was like, just, you know, they got caved in. They're laying down. Just run. Get away from them. But instead, he walks right towards the danger.
Again, plot convenience. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. Like, they went outside to slide.
Right.
And then that was just so Cutter can show up and start shooting at them. So they just go back inside and slide from there. He's like, why'd you leave in the first place?
Yeah, see, originally, I thought that maybe he was doing that. Like, they were going up to the top because when they slid, maybe they wanted to make sure they were on the surface, you know, instead. But then, yeah, they slide from underground later anyway, so what's the difference?
Yeah, I don't know. It is. It's a real shame because this could have been a really good story. And there are good points to it.
Oh, yeah.
But just the way the episode flowed was just not good.
Even when I watched it originally, this was not one of my favorite episodes. I was like, it's all right, you know. And then, you know, at the end of the episode, I had no idea who was who, but it comes up at the end in memory of Ken Steadman in the credits. I'm like, who the heck is that? Is it that guy? I was like, oh, I guess it's that guy. You know, it's Cutter. I didn't know that at the time.
Fortunately, they had this epic shot of him walking to the edge of like a ravine or something like that, doing some sort of heroic pose. I don't know why they had that footage of him, but it was like, at least it was nice of them to do a, you know, in memoriam for him.
Oh yeah, definitely.
He passed away during the filming of this episode.
I have this under messages in time, but it probably fits. Maybe it fits better here with talking about him now. There's a website that his family had started back then called kenstedman.com, and it basically talks about the accident that happened on set, because I looked up, you know, tried to find stuff about the accident, and it was pretty vague. You know, there was an accident with a dune buggy, basically, is what happened, and he passed away. He got killed when it rolled over. But kenstedman.com, you know, run by his family, it goes into a lot more detail about what happened, and they're pretty adamant that rules were not followed on the set, that the safety of the actors and the stuntman was not good. Like, it was they were in danger because procedures were not followed. They talked about they have a list of different people that they talked to, different authorities, and it seems like their implication is that the investigation was lacking, that it wasn't really followed through like it should have been. The authorities weren't holding people responsible for his death. It was just written off as a total accident. And like it's understandable. They've lost their child, you know. You know, of course they're going to be angry. They're going to want answers, you know. And it seems like they've done their investigations and they weren't getting good answers. Like they weren't reassured that, yeah, you know, we did everything we could to make sure that all the actors were safe, you know, on the set. The implication seems like that, no, they were not. They were cutting corners, basically. And I don't know. I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but given, you know, the budget and how Sliders is going, I think I kind of agree with them that they were probably trying to cut corners.
Yeah, very interesting. I didn't realize that it was an actual on-set accident that killed
him. Oh, yeah.
I guess I just naturally assumed it's happened in his regular everyday life.
Yeah, no, it happened on set during one of the scenes. The dune buggy had flipped or rolled over or something, and they talked to the owners of the dune buggy company that they rented, you know, the vehicles from, and it was something I didn't go read all into it. You can go check it out yourself. You go to kenstedman.com. You can read about it. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. Something about that particular vehicle company not being insured. You know, at one point it went bankrupt. It's like I think possibly the production team cut corners and went with cheap, you know, cheap vendors and things like that to cut costs.
And obviously nobody was really held too accountable because the episode ended up airing. So
exactly.
And now it's time for another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
Figures. We rescue the biker babe that rides with Mad Max.
This has been another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
All right, well, let's get into our second episode today. The episode is Dragon Slide, written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, directed by David Livingston. This originally aired on November 8th of 1996.
You've had some time now. You come up with that rational explanation yet on how a man can turn into a bird?
Not yet, Miss Wells, but I'm sure there are at least a dozen reasons.
I settle for just one. How's she doing, Q-Ball? Hey, Romeo. Snap out of it.
Sorry, I guess I was just lost in thought.
Yeah, we all know what kind, too.
Emrys 20 miles.
I've never heard of it.
Huh. On our world, it's a mythical druid city. The city of higher powers.
The druids? I thought they died out in the Middle Ages.
Actually, it was the Romans who wiped out the druids. But there was a bardic revival in the 19th century.
Yeah, not in my neighborhood. So what's their story?
They're an earth religion, kind of like the Native Americans. They worship nature and believe in magic and mystical powers. According to the legend, the druids are the ones that forged Excalibur.
How do you know all of that?
I have braces in junior high. A lot of time to read.
We begin with a woman, Melinda, trying to escape from a man named Skuldar, who denies her bribery attempts to let her escape, saying that, quote, he would know. He being Gareth, the once supreme, all-powerful chief druid in this dimension where magic is a part of everyday life. As our sliders slide in, they conveniently knock Skuldar over, and upon hearing Arturo call Quinn Mr. Mallory, he freaks out, changes shape into a bird, and flies off to warn Gareth that a Mallory has returned. This news shakes Gareth, as the Mallorys in this dimension, having once been powerful mages, were all murdered by Gareth, save one Mallory, Philip, who was imprisoned in Gareth's castle, kept alive so as not to incur the wrath of the god of high magic. Gareth's plan was to have a demon impregnate Melinda, creating a demi-human which he can possess and then live forever. However, knowing that a Mallory is alive, he decides to possess Mallory's body instead, being it is supposed to be an immortal body, or would be if Quinn was an actual mage in this world. Meanwhile, Wade tries to help Remy gain the love of a woman he knew on Earth Prime by using a love potion, but it backfires and causes Remy to fall in love with Wade, resulting in a number of sweet yet humorous attempts to woo her. Eventually, they turn to the woman Remy was attracted to, and she manages to use hypnosis to reverse the spell. Melinda appears to Quinn and the professor, asking Quinn to talk alone while throwing the old Jedi mind trick out on Arturo, who agrees that Quinn should go talk with her. Unfortunately, Melinda is being used as bait to subdue Quinn, who drops the timer as he is dragged away to the castle, ultimately being possessed by Gareth. Arturo finds the timer, conveniently, and goes to Melinda to explain about parallel universes and the fact that Quinn is not a wizard, let alone an immortal one. Arturo appeals to Melinda's sense of right and wrong, and she explains the only way to defeat Gareth is with the Mallory Sword. She reveals that she became Gareth's apprentice at a young age, using magic that he taught her to project an illusion of beauty to hide her scarred face, the result of a childhood accident. While Gareth tries to take over the Druid Council in his new immortal body, Arturo stabs him, revealing the not-quite-immortal Quinn's body bleeding. Gareth leaves Quinn's body, returning to his own body, and escapes back to the castle. Melinda must then drop her illusion of beauty in order to save Quinn. Together, they go to the castle, confronting Gareth as a dragon, and ultimately defeat him. They free Philip, reunite him with his love Melinda, and they slide away.
Hello? Melinda? Hello? Oh my god. Please untie me. What's he gonna do to you? Now that the moon is sextile Jupiter, Gareth can raise a demon from the underworld to impregnate me. He wants me to give birth to an immortal child like the wizard Merlin.
He's insane!
No, he's obsessed with immortality. Once the child is grown, he'll take possession of its body, which would mean he could live forever.
I admire your skill, officer. This isn't an easy place to break into. And I admire your dedication to your job. But I no longer have any need for Melinda to bear me a child. The Mallory wizard who found her in the woods has an immortal body.
You don't have the power to possess a wizard's body.
This one I do. Because he is a Mallory, and I know their weakness.
So you'll let her go?
Of course not. She is the bait that I will dangle in front of the wizard. Your presence, however, is no longer required.
Okay, so we pretty much have almost no trivia on this.
Right, because there was a note on Dimensions of Continuity that said this script was unique in that there was like no rewrites of the script. There was like very little editing of the script at all from the very first draft for whatever reason. I don't know why that was, but that's what it said. The two things that they did mention were that originally the reporter was not supposed to be blind. He was supposed to be in a wheelchair, and he says, after I wrote my unflattering article, I suddenly found my legs not working. So he was going to be, you know, crippled. Either way, that was a good touch. You know, it could be a wheelchair, it could be blind. Either way, it was nicely done. And then at the end, this would have changed things a little bit and maybe given us a recurring villain if Fox would have allowed that. Gareth at the very end says, as they go to slide, he says, "You haven't won." And as our sliders go into the vortex, Gareth's soul, that shiny thing that came out of his body or whatever, it goes out of his body and it follows them into the vortex.
I would assume that would not be followed up on if that had happened.
Right. Of course not. It's sliders.
Did he actually say which tree he would meet us under?
Mr. Nguyen!
Don't say my name. You've got 1 minute.
The bartender at the inn said you knew more about Gareth than anyone.
You knew that already. You just wasted 10 seconds.
We're concerned with his apprentice, Melinda. We think he might be abusing her.
Oh, I'm sure he is. But certain druids have developed incredible powers over the course of generations. Gareth's one of them. No one wants to challenge him. 40 seconds.
Is there any way this Melinda could regain her freedom?
Only if Gareth granted it, and that's not likely. He's got a soul black as tar. You ask me, he's the one responsible for the destruction of the Mallory clan.
Mallory clan?
Highly regarded white druids. Gareth feared their power and influence. I can't prove it yet, but I think he found their Achilles heel and murdered them. 20 seconds.
I recall a piece of druidic lore about not destroying an entire clan.
If you wipe out the last of a lineage, they say you incur the wrath of Mercury, god of high magic. I've heard Gareth Has the last Mallory brother imprisoned somewhere on his estate to avoid that?
Is there any way that we can get into Gareth's estate?
Sorry, you're out of time.
Okay, so getting into our discussion of Dragonslide. So Quinn doesn't even have to go looking for a woman in distress this time. He kind of just slides into it.
Exactly.
And
it's his superpower.
Yeah, he inadvertently saves Melinda.
Yes.
From Skuldar.
Skuldar. Love the name, you know? It's like, I am Skuldar, master of the universe.
Oh, dear. So, yeah. So I just laughed out loud from the get-go. Quinn didn't even have to go looking for it. And it turns out that we're in a world of wizards and druids.
Right.
There's really no scientific explanation behind it. I think this episode really is just flat out magic.
Yes. Total fantasy.
Yeah. As much as Arturo thinks he could explain it, I think ultimately even he lands on, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. He didn't even say at one point there's no explanation or he can't explain it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, we have a message in time that something from Arturo, actually, from John Rhys-Davies about that.
Okay, interesting.
We'll get to that, yeah.
But in the meantime, Charlie O'Connell's back.
He is, you know? And I tell you, he needs a haircut. Whatever he's rocking there, that mullet or whatever it is, it just, like, cut the freaking hair.
Yeah. So he's going to take on the role of exposition extra this episode.
Yes.
Of, you know, they get Melinda and they're going to just take her back to the castle. You know, for what appears to be a pretty civilized world, you know, there's that main township that they go to.
Mm-hmm.
There's this big ass castle out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
That Gareth has. So yep. They take her back to the giant castle. And Charlie O'Connell just gives us all the stuff about how Gareth supposedly killed all the Mallorys and you don't want to mess with him. And Melinda is his apprentice, so, you know, he's allowed to do whatever he wants to her. And I was like, all right, cool, thanks. At least it's not Diggs, I guess.
Exactly. Not yet.
Yeah. But, you know, these guys are cops, right?
Yeah.
And they're just, ostensibly, Melinda is a prisoner. Like,
yeah.
The way he talked about her, it kind of, like, made it sound like she was some sort of, like, sex slave or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know he calls her the apprentice, but yeah, it just seems like, you know, the norm in this world is that you can just pick a young girl and take her on as your apprentice. And then as she grows up, you just do whatever you want with her. Like, there's no questions asked. It's
right.
Very bizarre.
That's just odd. It's like they're supposed to be the authorities, but like, oh, no, we can't do anything about that guy. Has that happened? I thought that happened before or something like that, where the authority. Oh, yeah. In the Dream Masters, you know, it's like, oh, we can't do anything about the Dream Masters. Sorry.
Yeah, they're so,
like,
evil.
Really?
And then we get a side story that Remy and Wade are going to take place in. But Remy runs into an old flame called Alicia.
Mm.
And suddenly we get this story about how he was pretty much going to ask Alicia to marry him on the day that he got caught up in sliding. So a little retcon there.
A little, just a little bit. Little
He's bit. Not once mentioned her. Because
never.
If he was, like, so in love with Alicia to... Oh, well, he didn't say he was going to ask her to marry him, but he was going to ask her to move in with him and everything like that. So
right.
They were a pretty serious couple. But since they've been sliding, like, Remy's been with a whole bunch of women. Like, there's been a lot of episodes where he's hooked up with some woman.
Yes, exactly.
So to retcon in this Alicia person is...
It doesn't ring true. It doesn't.
It really doesn't. It does lead to some good acting moments for Kelvin Derricks. You know,
well, definitely.
When he's talking about running into people that we care about who don't know who we are. And
right.
Things like that. Like, I really like that stuff. But, yeah, do the ends justify the means of getting to those good character pieces?
Yeah. The thing that I was like, I mean, because it's happened so many times that they should know by now. Like, yeah, that's Alicia, but that is not your Alicia. It's a totally different person. I know it looks like Alicia, but it's not your, it's not the girl that you were in love with, that you were so close to, you know, but he's like, we have a connection. Like, no, you don't. You really don't. You know, like, why would you pull that out? Because maybe he's hoping that Rembrandt on this world has a connection with her. You know, but I don't know. Because they've done that before. Like Quinn did that with Daylan, you know, back in that episode. He's like, oh, yeah, we went to school together. Da, da, da. It's like, no, you didn't, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Because he does kind of pull out those things, doesn't he? Like,
yeah. Yeah. He's like, yeah, as if I wrote this song for you. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, no, she doesn't know you. She doesn't know these songs you wrote, you know? It's like, I don't know. Yeah, it was. I think he did a great job with it. But it just, it was, yeah.
But I really do like the town, though, that they go to. Like, what a gorgeous-looking little town, eh?
Yeah.
It's like one of those places you drive out to on, like, a nice weekend or something.
Yeah.
You know, just
yeah.
some nice little township somewhere. So, yeah. So I give them props for the location.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we did get some exposition from Charlie O'Connell. But, of course, we still need to get some more from Diggs.
Well, yeah. We can't go without Diggs. We need Diggs. You know? I mean, that's his, I mean, the man's got to eat. Okay.
Yeah.
He's got to eat. We might as well give him some exposition lines.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us more about Gareth plays Diggs. And of course, he just lays out everything about like killed all the Mallorys, but apparently he's still got one of them there because he doesn't want to unwrath the gods. Something. He's like, God, how do you know all this? Seriously. Like, I understand like Diggs is a barman, so he has a lot of knowledge about stuff.
Yeah.
But I think Gareth is the kind of person who's going to keep his business to himself.
Yes, definitely.
Especially about causing the genocide of an entire family line, bar one. Like, what, did Melinda go to town, get drunk, and start mouthing off or something? I don't
know. Exactly. Or his Skuldar, you know.
Skuldars, yeah. He's been confiding in Diggs.
Tired of being a toady, so you know he goes down there and lets it all out to Diggs at the bar.
And then we get the whole plot, pretty much.
The demon baby maker.
Yeah. Melinda's back with Gareth, and his whole thing is like, let's make a baby.
The idea was he was going to conjure a demon to impregnate. That's what Melinda said when the other sheriff, Charlie O'Connell's partner, came in. She said something like, he's going to conjure a demon to impregnate me so he can make a demi-human and live forever.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
But then he flips the switch because he's like, there's Mallory, I'll just take the Mallory's body because it's immortal. And I was like, well, you've got bloody David Copperfield frozen in the corner there. Why haven't you just possessed his body already?
Like, right, exactly. He's
I
there.
I don't get it. And of course, conveniently, it's the Mallorys.
Right. Right, exactly.
And this whole thing about the Mallory sword and only a Mallory can wield it. So I'm like, all right, Chekhov's Mallory sword. Quinn will have that in his hands by the end of the episode.
Right. You know, I wonder if the reason why he didn't possess David Copperfield there, I wonder if the reason why he didn't do that, because if he does possess him, maybe that is considered wiping out the entire line.
Maybe.
So now that he has another Mallory, you know, now he can still keep the line alive because Philip will be frozen there, but he can possess another Mallory and have that immortality. You know, like I think if he had possessed him, maybe that would be considered wiping out the final one of the line. I don't know. Just a thought.
So he didn't come up with this plan before he'd wipe them all out. Except
exactly.
For Philip. All right. Go with it.
It'll work. We'll take it.
Then we get to what I think is probably the best part of the episode, is Quinn and Arturo going to visit the blind reporter guy.
Right.
I like this guy. I thought he did like a really good job with like the monologue that he had to throw out.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I hate when they do the whole thing like, all right, you got 1 minute though. You know, because they do that in other movies and TV shows, too. It's like, well, how about a little bit more? You know? Come on. Really? I mean, if you're going to talk to us about it, 1 minute or 2 minutes, what's going to matter?
No, I just like the way he did it because it was like, you know, you've got the minute. And he's like, oh, you know, someone told us that you had answers to this or something. He's just like, you already knew that. 50 seconds.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
He does the count, like he'll answer them and then give them like an update on how much longer they've got.
Yeah, no, he did a great job. He was very good at it.
I thought it was fantastic.
Great actor.
I guess cutting back to Wade and Remy is that, you know, of course, Remy's in his like, why was me? You know, caught up sliding. Alicia doesn't know me. So he and Wade decide that they're going to go and cast a love spell. Which backfires, and Remy falls in love with her.
Yeah, it was good. I like this. I like this part. See, I like the reporter, but for this was a neat little humorous part to have in the episode. I really liked it.
where he's picking up flowers.
And, I know. Yeah. Like, good people, do you know what love is? I thought I knew what love was. And then I met a girl named Wade. Oh, boy. He's laying it on thick.
Yeah. I did think it was weird, though, that the police, like, showed up. And, like, Wade's like, you're going to get arrested or something. I'm like, it's illegal to, like... stand on a ledge and tell people you're in love.
Like, exactly. I was what like, is, what is going on?
You're not
on?
Really, like, disturbing the peace or anything, are you?
No. Yeah, I don't know. It was funny, though. It was very amusing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a good moment for Remy. And, again, like, he's going to have some, like, great moments. And especially coming up towards the end where they go to see Alicia because she's a therapist and she sort of hypnotizes him to sort of help break the spell, you know, which was good, you know. It is pulling away from what I was saying. It seems to be, like, real magic in this world. Mm-hmm. This is the only part where we sort of get that it's maybe just some sort of scientific mumbo-jumbo,
right,
get in your head kind of stuff, which was good, you know. And he has the whole moment about, yes, he loves Wade, but it's not, like, in love kind of stuff, you know, that right. How her friendship and what kind of a person she is and what she means to him, I thought was really, really good.
Yeah, it was really well done, really well acted on both parts, even, like, Wade, who's just sort of sitting there reacting to him. It was, they were good reactions.
Of course, there's the big crescendo of the whole thing.
Right.
With Gareth and his dragon.
It sounds like a child's book. Gareth and his dragon. One day, Gareth found a dragon.
Yeah, because he's kidnapped Quinn.
Yes.
And possessed him. And then they're doing this, like, druid ritual thing. So the only thing they can do is to have Artura go up and stab him.
Right, to prove that he's not immortal.
Because all the other druids were, like, going to go along with it if he was immortal.
Basically.
So immediately they just, like, go away. But then it turns out that Gareth is the dragon.
I didn't expect that.
I don't... Yeah. I couldn't care. Couldn't care.
Yeah, the ending was a little bit weird. It's like they're going to go to the castle and they stop off to get a falcon because the falcon can get the hawk. You know? But, like, remember, the hawk is a shapeshifter. If he changes to a man, the falcon's not going to be able to do too much to him, I think. I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know? Probably. As long as he's not dumb enough to stay in the hawk form, you know, I think he's going to be all right. The falcon's not going to kill him.
And then, of course, it just ends the way I guess we all guessed it would.
Well, yeah, Melinda's like, your aim will be true, Quinn.
Yeah.
Throw the sword. Your aim will be true.
Yeah. So Gareth's dead, Philip's unfrozen, and they slide.
And everyone lives happily ever after. In syndication.
Yeah, it's such a shame. Like, I really hate to, like, get down on the show. I really do. You know, I laid into the Dream Masters last week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at least juxtaposed against The Guardian, which was a really good one. These two here...
Yeah.
Have had some, like, good stuff in there, some, like, really, really good stuff.
Yeah, there's some nuggets in there.
But the stories just aren't flowing right.
No.
And they're just ending in very cliche. The writing is just terrible, bar those few really good character moments. It's a shame.
Yeah, and if they had just, like, if only they could have just focused on more character moments, you know, it would have been a whole different show at this point.
Well, since you wouldn't tell me what happened today, I went to see Alicia.
Excuse me, Dr. Arvo. The woman is definitely not the girl that I knew on Our World.
And?
She told me what you wouldn't. I feel really weird about this.
Hey, don't, okay? You weren't yourself.
Alicia thinks I was. And now that I know what was said, so do I. Look, spells, hypnosis, whatever. Truth is that I do feel something special for you. Now, maybe it's because we're the only two normal people on this journey. Q-Ball, the professor. They're A-kids. Having a grand time traveling around the universe. Now, I'm not saying that it isn't an adventure.
But
mostly, I just want to be back home, enjoying life and the people that I love. stay with you. At least I get half of my dream.
Okay, so let's get into some messages in time.
All right, so messages in time for Dragon Slide. A lot of people were saying that Sliders is not sci-fi, I guess. Sliders is fantasy trying to be sci-fi. Just throw some science jumbo mumbo in or whatever. And I understand what they're saying. They got, you know, we had the whole like magic this episode. We've got the Dream Master episode. It's a lot more fantasy, not a lot of sci-fi, which even, but see, the whole thing is, like, I think of it, it's the sci-fi is like there just to get them to the different worlds. And then it should be a story about the characters. Yeah. And how they react to what's going around them, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a ton of sci-fi to make it sci-fi for me.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be crazy adventures.
Exactly.
Either,
yeah.
Just so crazy, people, like, yeah, wacky crap going on.
Exactly. One person was very depressed and was like, well, I'm learning to live with lowered expectations now. You know, just like, wow, all right, that's sad, man. Hope you're okay. Someone else said, Quinn is the James T. Kirk of sliding, you know? Comes into an episode, finds a woman, you know, gets with them, and then they save the day and get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. A lot of people enjoyed the Remy scenes, that him being in love. They thought that was great. This wasn't really about an episode, but someone had a great parody of the E.E. Cummings / Einstein quote from the original, from the pilot episode, where it said, there's a hell of a universe next door, you know, let's go check it out. They said, on their signature, it said, there's a hell of a universe next door. I'll bet Sliders lives up to its potential. Let's go. I'm like, all right. Yeah. For this episode, they said, you know, things here aren't really a change of history. You know, it's just magic is there. Shape changers. It's not alternate history anymore. It's just a fantasy world. And people were blaming Fox for the direction of the show was taken, which is true, because that they brought in, you know, David Peckinpah and a whole bunch of people who supported what Fox wanted, which is this type of thing, you know, trying to, you know, more action, trying to get onto the popular, you know, movies and things of the day. So, and then finally we have an actual message in time that John Rhys-Davies said in an article way back when. And I think I got this from earthprime.com. They had this on their site for this episode. He said that, you know, people tune in for science, not fantasy. There's a difference between the audiences of sci-fi and the magic fantasy world. And we're losing viewers because of that, you know. People look at Sliders and they see this episode and they say, oh, I get it. This is not a kid's show. This is a kid's show. It's not science fiction, you know, and their numbers drop and they never get those viewers back. And they said, yeah, after this episode, the numbers did drop and it didn't come back for quite a few episodes, they said. So,
yeah,
even John Rhys-Davies knew that this is not one of our good episodes.
Yeah, there's a reason why we're heading to where we're heading with our character.
Yeah. All right, so now messages in time for Desert Storm. There was the post, as we've said before, about the, quote, tributes. This guy was saying, you know, there's a real lack of originality and creativity in the show lately. You know, we've seen Sliders do Jurassic Park, Twister. Now we got Dragonheart. We've had The Running Man. We sort of had Independence Day with the aliens. We've got Waterworld for Desert Storm, even though it was more like Desert World. You know, and then they say, now it looks like Junior is on tap for this week, the one where Remy gets pregnant. And it's, you know, they're right. You know, they are right. There's a lot of tributes to these, you know, these big movies that are going on. And we've said this before, but then the rest of that post was people defending Sliders, you know, and explaining why, you know, well, it's not really Jurassic Park. It's not really Twister, you know? And I'm like, yeah, but see, that's coming from the point. Those are true fanboys right there, you know? Mm. No matter what Sliders does, they're just going to love it. You know, they can't look at it objectively and say, well, yeah, that was probably inspired by that movie. That was probably inspired by that movie. Because the truth of it is, that is what happened. That's the way it was. But they're like making excuses for why they weren't tributes.
You do have to be objective. Listen to this episode or our discussion of the Dream Masters, you know. We obviously love the show enough to be doing a podcast about it.
Right, 20 years later.
Yeah. But of course, we're still going to be objective to the point where we're going to call out bad writing or bad acting or stuff like that, you know,
right.
Because it's there. It's blatant. It's in your face. And not every episode is going to be a winner, unfortunately.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. So we've got someone was saying about Cutter. You know, he goes to Diggs, and he's asking for the crystal. And it's like, I don't know, some of those lines they felt were not true to Cutter being like a badass. Like, he should have just went in and be like, give me that crystal, you know? Instead, he's kind of nice about it, you know? Mm. He's not like a mean guy like you would think he would be. They said it didn't really fit him. People were confused about Arturo's illness because it's there in some episodes and it's addressed, but not in others. And it was all because of the out of order airing, you know? So, yeah.
The order's kind of been a little bit steady here at the moment, with the exception of a few taken out and placed towards the beginning. But yeah, this season hasn't been too bad. But yeah, we'll see as we go along.
Yeah. They said, again, no explanation of alt history this season. It's not like the focus anymore. They've trying to move away from that, it seems. And they are. They don't really talk about that much, which, like I said, previous episodes, that's my favorite part, to see how things diverged from one world to the other. And like, this world is just, you know, the magic world was just boom. It's just magic, you know. And then desert world, it's like, well, yeah, it's just desert. It just evolved differently, you know.
Just a desert area.
That's it. Yeah. They really don't like the expanded radius, you know, how they can land anywhere from San Francisco to L.A. They felt it's like more of a gimmick, you know, like try to tell real stories. Don't just use like, oh, now we're suddenly in this world. You know, it's so different. It's L.A., it's Hollywood or whatever. It's like just tell a better story, you know. They said there's not enough science in alt history. It's just too much fantasy this season. And, that's it, because we talked about the Ken Stedman thing earlier. So, yeah, there you go. People are kind of pretty much in agreement with what we've been saying. It's not just us, see. It's the people back then who are watching it for the first time. They feel the same way.
Yeah. We hope that we're not getting you all down out there.
I'm sure we're going to have good episodes coming up, like, well,
soon.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there's an awesome two-parter coming up. Yeah. So. I remember that being pretty good.
Yes.
Okay, so no messages from Earth Prime.
Nope.
Still putting out the call.
The mailbox is empty.
Yep. I'm going to keep asking for that Punk Wade fanfic. I know someone out there is working on it. But in the meantime, next week's episodes are The Fire Within and The Prince of Slides.
Now, I don't remember much about The Prince of Slides yet, but I do remember The Fire Within, and I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, I remember something about sentient fire.
Yes, sentient fire.
I'm pretty sure the Prince of Slides is the junior tribute.
Oh, okay, that's right. It is. That's right. Well, that one's humorous anyway.
Yeah. So look forward to that.
All right. Well, that is it for this somewhat depressing episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. And you can visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, earthprime.com, and the active form over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Always very helpful. Okay, so thank you for joining me, Tom. Even though we're getting down on the episodes a bit, it's still great to sit here and talk to you about Sliders.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's good. I do enjoy, even though we are not enjoying the last two episodes here, it's like it's still fun to talk about, to revisit the show.
Okay, so let's get out of here, and I'll just say, until next time, if it'll make you happier, I'll go and visit the witch doctor.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.